listeners, you've heard Ori Zohar on our program before. He is actually a regular. And part of the reason is not just because he's charming and well-spoken, but because if I start out by saying, what's new with burlap and barrel, he could probably go on for 8 hours telling me, because there's always something new. I don't know how you handle it, to tell you the truth, Ori, because there's always something new. I mean, do you dream about what could have happened? I mean, how do you, you're around the clock, I think, thinking about what's next.
There's so much fun stuff to do, and there's so many areas around, and I'd love to talk to you also at some point, you know, about, like, we're always thinking about the business being in motion. You know, we started with single spices, and then everybody was asking us for blends, and so we started working on collaboration blends, and then we said maybe we can make our own and kind of leave more money with a farmer. So we started working with blends, you know, sending them back at the origin blends that the farmers are making themselves. And so we keep, like, there's so many more spices we want to source, there's so many blends we want to make, or there's so many extracts we want to make. I don't know, like, there seems like we feel like we want, there's so much more stuff that we can do, and there's only so much things that we can make. So even what you're hearing is a fraction. And for all the things that we do successfully do, there's probably 5 or 10 things that we tried to do that didn't make it across the finish line.
Well, you know, you're having your first participation in the Specialty Food Association Summer Fancy Food show in the Javits Center in New York. I was reading the blurb about your participation, and I see that you're planning to expand. I remember you expanded from spices to a salt, but you're going to continue expanding into salts. But you're also into other seasoning commodities. What are your plans into that?
The Fancy Food Show, for those who don't know, is a fun industry show where a lot of big retail buyers for grocery and specialty food and other retailers end up going there. And this is our first time there. So we're getting a 10-foot by 10-foot booth, and we need to decorate it, and we're bringing some of our team members and all that stuff. And that was mainly because we realized that most people still buy their spices in grocery stores. So instead of going into these big national chains, we want to try to find small and specialty and independent, and then maybe regional, that where people are going to buy better quality ingredients and be there. So that's our attempt at doing that, of creating part of our lineup and making it available for at grocery stores. But still, all the fun stuff is going to be on our site. And so, like you talked about, you know, we're trying to figure out what else we can do. And what we had realized is that we said nobody really knows where their salt comes from. And in particular, nobody knows where their sugar comes from. And sugar is much closer to a spice than salt. You know, sugar is the product of plants that are grown and trees, and it's processed. And still, everyone treats it like a pure commodity. So that's the next thing that we're really trying to do, is to introduce a whole lineup of single-origin sugars. And so we did some experiments with packaging last year, and everybody didn't like what we did. We learned. But we put them in these paperboard tubes, so these, like, skinny, tall tubes that would hold, like, a pound of sugar in them. And we thought that was great because they weren't fragile, they would chip easily, and we could print on the whole outside of it. But what we learned is that people wanted to see the sugar, because we were offering panela from Colombia and maple sugar from Vermont. And people were like, what is this? What does it look like? What color is it? What's the size of the grain of the sugar? And they weren't able to tell that, so people didn't like that. And the other mistake that we realized that we made is that we put a sifter top on top so you could shake out the sugar, and it had one of those, like, a narrow, like, little mouth, and everybody wanted to scoop out their sugar with a spoon or a measuring cup, and it was impossible to do it with these. So we got some very direct feedback from our customers that they did not like it. So we're going to relaunch the sugars in these wide-mouth glass jars, which I think will be much – we'll let people see the sugars, and we'll let people kind of put a spoon in there, put a measuring cup in there, and so I think that it'll serve people better. And we're also adding jaggery from India, which is our partner farmer who grows our turmeric, also produces a really buttery, wonderful jaggery. And then we're also bringing in golden crystal sugar, so this kind of turbinado style sugar from Barbados, which is the last
Wow.
and only coral island still producing cane sugar. And so we traveled there last year and met with the government and met with the producers. And so we're really excited to bring a really kind of like crunchy, flavorful kind of golden crystal sugar.
The one the spice I was in, most intrigued by was the I don't know which way you call it, but it's post forestation or reforestation, and I think the spice origin is somewhere like Costa Rica.
That's exactly right. Yeah, Ethan was actually traveling to Costa Rica. His wife had a conference there. Ethan tagged along, and anytime that we travel in this company, even for fun, we try to loop in a few spice farm visits while we're there. And there was someone that moved down to Costa Rica specifically because they don't have a standing army. He's an American guy. He said, "I want
Really?
to get out of here. I want to go to a country that only is set up for peace." And so then he started working there with the really rich soil, creating grown turmeric and specifically kind of reforesting the area. So grown turmeric in a way that lets it grow kind of under the canopy and supports the kind of healthy growth of the forest around it. And we tried the turmeric, and it was this really sweet, really kind of gingery turmeric. And so we have our classic new harvest turmeric that we bring in from India. That's also a very buttery and rich turmeric. This one is a little sweeter, a little like almost spicier and gingerier. And so we really liked it. So we for our spice club, which is where we introduce this, we wanted to bring in a unique and different spice and a version term, see what people thought of it, because we really liked him and we really liked his business model and we really liked the quality of the turmeric. And so, we wanted to bring another option for folks to try. Have you been cooking with it? Have you been putting it in smoothies or teas? What have you been doing with the turmeric?
Just a little bit. I was sort of getting used to using it, recognizing that it wasn't something where I would be reproducing the flavor. I would be adding to the flavor somehow. And every time I cook chicken these days, I add some turmeric of both kinds
Yeah,
in the marinade of the chicken, and it works really well.
that's I think that's exactly how I cook with turmeric too, is I end up kind of dosing myself and my wife with it, where I just like any recipe, I'm just like, could this use a little bit of turmeric? Probably. And so it ends up adding just a little bit of a background support flavor in a lot of dishes that I cook.
Plus, it's a ravishing flavor.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
mean, just a totally ravishing flavor. Doesn't matter that lady's hogging spices on her website. The doctor who's saying the only turmeric I will buy is this particular brand.
Yeah, I think that we're, I mean, we've talked to a lot of, we actually went over to University of Arizona where there's the Andrew Weil Center, who's a well-known kind of doctor and kind of influence force behind like food as medicine. And turmeric is one of those like building block spices, it
Yeah,
says,
it
for healthier living, make sure that you have turmeric in your diet. And we try to, what we bring in is a really well-grown, high curcumin and recently harvested and processed turmeric to hopefully capture all of the curcumin and other positive impacts of that in people's diets.
Well, I mean, I read somewhere. I mean, there's always something new to learn about the spices. I mean, that's the thing that in seasonings. But I read that to really activate turmeric, you gotta couple it with black pepper.
Yeah, that's right. So, right, the bioavailability of it is higher when you also cook with black pepper. But that's also why turmeric is great in just savory cooking too, or in chicken rubs or kebabs or whatever it may be, because, or even actually like salmon. Anyway, I like turmeric in a lot of things, but I'm also naturally using a good amount of black pepper in those foods too. So they go well
Yeah.
together. They're a good pair.
You know, I did it all in green tea for a while. I have been off of that
Yeah.
kick, but I like it a lot. So black
Yeah,
pepper
sure.
and green tea and turmeric, yeah.
Well, I got messed up the other day because I was cooking something, I can't remember what it was, and one of the ingredients was Zanzibar black pepper.
And couldn't make your veal
there wasn't any in the kitchen. Oh,
yeah.
My God. What a disaster.
Well, you send me an email after this, and we'll make sure that you're restocked with all the spices that you're feeling short on.
It was funny. He really panicked because he couldn't.
But we do find that when you start cooking with some of these spices and these ingredients, it's a little hard to go back, and we really see that with our customer retention on our website, too. So that's what we're now trying to answer in talking about being in more grocery, is how do we just get people to try their first taste of our spices, and then hopefully they see it opens their eyes, and then we can kind of introduce them to the rest of the lineup.
The Zanzibar pepper is really good because it's crunchy.
Yeah. And it's quite a hot one, you know. And when we go, we're trying to taste spices we're just trying to, like, as you go, try to taste different batches and different harvests and all that. It's really hard to taste a lot of the Zanzibar black pepper because your palate gets blown out almost immediately
once you
start crunching on whole peppercorns.
Now, did you start out with this company expecting that you were going to create an entire community around it, around your company, around the spices you're selling? I mean, did you deliberately plan for all that?
You know, I think we really were trying to respond to what our customers were asking for. And in the early days of the company, I mean, it was just me and Ethan. We didn't have a customer support team. And people kept telling us, give us recipes, we want more recipes. And we were like, we can't satisfy this insatiable need for recipes. And on the other hand, we had a bunch of customers that were sending us photos of the incredible food that they were cooking. And we had a little bit of a light bulb that went off and said, wait a second, I think there's a solution here. And so we made this spice forum on Facebook, and now we have over 12,000 members there. And some people come in there to ask questions, and some people go in there to show off a little bit and to share their expertise. But some of our spice farmers are part of the Facebook community, and some chefs that we work with are part of the community. And so we tried to make this kind of magical thing. At the beginning, there was nobody, and it was just me posting, you know, my, like, turmeric latte to the void, you know, of no one. And over time, we had a handful of people that really became active and really started, like, being stewards of the community and the conversation. And that was a really nice way where I could ask somebody how to cook, you know, what their Thanksgiving dishes are, and all of a sudden I get a response from a spice farmer, a professional chef, some really incredible home cooks, and we're starting to have full conversations on how to cook together. But like you said, we also have a really strong community around our Spice Club, where we have over 3,000 members in our Spice Club that every quarter together get the same box, like a wine shipment, like a wine club.
Yeah.
And so you open it and you discover what's inside, you know, at the same time as everyone else. And as a perk for it, we now do these like quarterly calls where we invite anyone who wants to talk with us to join a big video call. We get around 100 people or so every time. And it's the team and talking about sourcing. And we also invite some of the folks that were featured in the Spice Club to join us. So in this last Spice Club, we worked with an Afghan company called Ziba to do these like spiced fruits. So they make this incredible figs and berries and raisins that are all dried, and they toss them.
Peter loves
a lot of
dried fruit. He loves
it. It was really good.
Yeah.
We didn't know how people would react because it's cinnamon, it's cumin, it's a little sweet, a little savory, but it came out really well. So somebody from Ziba came on and chatted with us, and we had just like Shadell who's our partner farmer in the Caribbean that brings in the Caribbean bay leaves. She came on and chatted, and so we have a great deal. Like, you want to talk to a spice farmer? This is your chance. And so we really tried to open it up, and we found that people really like, it's one thing to just sell a product at the grocery store or online, and that be the end of your relationship. But we found there's so much more that people want to know how we make it and where the decisions came from and who's behind it. And so we've been trying to open the door on that and let people talk to us. The customer support, too, it's 100% answered by people who are our team members. We're not outsourcing. We're not anything. So we've tried to really create a little bit of a community touch and feel like a community store, even though we're online and even though we're a remote company ourselves. We wanted it to feel like walking into your favorite store in your neighborhood and that you feel welcome and part of it there.
Well, I mean, it seems like you had planned it, but it sounds like it was really kind of a spontaneous result of what you were doing. And I know that people are much more interested today in where everything comes from and how you do stuff. But who knew that spices would be such a major issue, huh?
Yeah, you know, we were hoping it, but we didn't know, you know, because we were like, listen, we know that people care a lot about their coffee and chocolate and tea. All industries where, like, single origin had made a really big impact. And we knew that people were going to their farmers markets to buy straight from, you know, farmers without the intermediaries and didn't want those, like, cold storage apples, you know, that were picked a year ago. And so we saw people going butchers and cheesemongers and all of that, getting fresh pastas. And we saw the spices. And again, this is an after-the-fact thing. Like, we weren't sitting in our, like, you know, homes and living rooms thinking about this. It all started with Ethan bringing back this really incredible cumin that grows wild in northern Afghanistan. But really, what we saw, people said, oh, we like this, but now that we bought cumin from you, what about this? And now my onion powder doesn't seem good enough. And now why am I still buying Montreal steak seasoning? And so we just kind of saw people looking around their pantry and saying, can you do a version of this too out of single origin spices? And so we just kept trying to say yes to what people were asking for. And then the business kept evolving. Right now, one area that we're asking is, would people want from burlap and barrel single origin honey? What about single origin, where we have one of our partner farmers in Turkey, Urfa, that produces Urfa chili, is also the capital for pomegranates, and they make this incredible pomegranate molasses. So we're going to see, maybe we can bring in some pomegranate molasses. So we're kind of this year asking the question, beyond spices, what other single origin but spice adjacent things can we do? If you have any advice for us, very happy to hear.
Well, you know, I mean, we've done so many interviews that are surprising, and one of them was a whole group of people, people in West Africa, north of West Africa, had a cultural tradition of beekeeping, and so they make these incredible honeys.
Sure.
I mean, it's a cultural thing. It's not transplanted into them. It's been in their blood for years and, you know, decades and years and centuries.
And that's what we got to see. We do these collaborations that are in the Spice Club and also just on the site to see what else people would buy that touches spices. And so we worked with the Cliff Family Winery in California. They have this thing that they call solar-grown honey. Because they under the solar panels that they use to offset the energy costs of the big Cliff Bar bakeries, they plant beehives there, and pollinator friendly flowers. And so what they end up doing is they make this honey. We saw that we brought in cinnamon honey and vanilla honey and ginger honey and cacao honey, and even we made a hot honey with them. And people really like them. And so that kind of, like our ears
perked up. What's
the
name of that
okay.
company? I think we interviewed them.
They're called Cliff Family Winery. And it's the same group that started and owned Cliff Bar, the same Cliff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's funny. It's a vast assortment of people. But once you get into this specialty food business, you find out that there's a lot of connections, so that it's natural evolution for you to go into all these collaborations. I mean, it's kind of natural, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels like a win-win because our customers want to find out about other companies that we think they would also like, and vice versa. Like right now, King Arthur, the baking flour
Yeah.
company, sells a lot of our spices on their site, and they're doing what we do to smaller companies than us to like spotlight us, which has been really wonderful and really helpful. But it also solves the need that when you're buying flour, what else do you need? Well, you probably need herbs de Provence if you're going to make, a focaccia or maybe sun-dried tomato powder or maybe some cinnamon for your babka. And so it kind of ends up being a win-win where King Arthur gets to sell, everything that their customers need, and they get to tip off their customers to us as a company that's kind of worth considering. So there's this whole ecosystem where we're all recommending and referring each other, but it has to be in a way that people. It has to be a win-win, and that's what we're really been trying to pay attention to.
Well, it's very exciting for you as well, isn't it, Ari?
It's exciting and it's fun because when we were smaller, it was really hard to exist. Every entrepreneur knows that in the early days of your company, if one
You're
thing
lucky.
goes wrong, your company is so fragile and it could all disappear. And so we now have a good team. We work with good suppliers. We can now buy like enough jars that we can customize our packaging and make it really feel special. And we have this big base of customers. It's like, we like what you've brought us so far. What else should we do? Like what else should we look into? And that's been really fun to be like, oh, look, there's this small vinegar company that we think is doing an incredible job, and we made a vinegar together. Oh, there's this great hot sauce company, and we really love their hot sauces, but they made this one with our black lime. So it's been really fun to kind of go around the horn and just keep kind of sharing the wealth because it really feels like it's a win-win.
Well, I think you're amazing, but you already know that. If somebody wants to join your spice club, what should they do?
So if you go to our site, Burlap and Barrel, and that's Burlap Andbarrel, or do you know what? We actually bought the domain singleoriginspices.com. So if you
Oh,
want to,
you
you can
got
also
to.
type in singleoriginspices.com. It'll redirect to our site. But come check it out. Join the Spice Club. We're now taking kind of sign-ups for the next one, which is going to be the August Spice Club. It's going to be really great, but we don't do any spoilers ahead of time because that people would get mad at us. And we're also launching a lot of big things, so we're really hoping to bring the sugars back by the time you hear this, so hopefully in July. And then we're trying to keep exploring other sweeteners too. So we're hoping to have some other big announcements on our site. So even if you're not sure, just sign up for our newsletter on our site, and you'll get to hear all the good stuff that's coming down the pipe.
Well, Ari, I don't know what you don't have a lot of extra time on your hands, I don't think, do you?
Well, it's been really fun, and now what's been really special is that we have a great like we have a lot we're now 17 people, all remote. And so when you come talk to us, maybe you'll talk to Bailey, who helps us with sourcing and operations, or maybe you'll talk to Carolyn, who's one of our customer support folks. And so that's been also really gratifying is when we started the company, it was Ethan and I like just trying to make a business large enough to pay ourselves minimum wage. And now we have this entire team of really smart and capable and independent people that all share the same values and are trying to build this all together. So that's also been really nice is to be able to have a team working and doing it and helping kind of grow the company. So we've been really grateful for that. And it's been really fun to get to this kind of phase, this chapter in the company's life.
Now, next we'll find out what Mrs. Ori is going to contribute.
Yeah, exactly. I recently got married. Actually, this is our 3-week wedding anniversary today. And she's an incredible cook in her own right, but she has her own women's underwear business. So we are not in the same industry, and we have not found a way to collaborate quite yet, but we're working on
More than underwear.
Somehow I have a feeling you're going to work it
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're taking
Well,
pitches. If you're listening to this, we're taking pitches.
Don't worry. It's always great having you on. And I hope you enjoy the fancy food show. And that, I mean, I look forward to this with the sugars because it's, I mean, there are so many that I never even knew existed, so many sweet sources for seasoning. It's just amazing. And
Yeah, we
let's.
really think sugar can be used as an ingredient. You're absolutely right. And if anyone's hearing this, come check us out at the Fancy Food Show. We'll be at booth 6150, or just go to our site at Burlap and Barrel.
All right, listeners, you got it here. Ori, thanks as always, and continued success as always. Love
Thank you so
talking
much
to
for
you.
having me.
Bye-bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Yes, listeners, we're talking to Estelle Sohn, and she has a company called Flour and Olive. And from the name, I don't think you understand what it is, because it took me a while to register it at all. But Estelle, you make cake mixes, right?
That's right. I make olive oil cake mixes. So Flour and Olive is an olive oil cake mix company. We produce four cake mixes in four flavors. That's almond, chocolate, ginger, and vanilla. And they're made from unbleached and whole wheat flour. And like the name suggests, they're designed to be baked with extra virgin olive oil. We use one simple baking method across all our recipes, except for the vegan recipes, which have their own method. But the idea is that if you can make one of our cakes, you can make them all.
Great.
The cake mixes are designed to actually be paired with our international collection of over 70 recipes from more than 45 countries. And
wow.
So this is why it was important for me to have that one simple baking method so that it really is easy to bake whichever recipe you choose to make.
Now, listeners, I should clue you in that that Estelle's company and product actually got a gold Sophie, which is no small matter because it's an intensely competitive niche of the food, especially food market. Congratulations on that, Estelle.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I mean it's such a gold Sophie. I think you'll find a great deal of difference in your market as a result of that. It's really an accomplishment. Now, we're not going. Your background is very complicated, and we're not going to get into all of it. But you have a lot of different cultural influences in there. But what actually led you to want to make a cake mix?
Well, I was a stay-at-home mother for about 10 years, and I was looking to relaunch my career. And while I'd been a stay-at-home mom, I had learned how to cook and bake. I didn't know how to do either really before. And I grew to love it. Yeah, it's actually my Alsatian mother-in-law that I first learned how to cook from. So, you know, I would make spätzle and Bäckerofen and, you know, other, and Alsatian recipes like, you know, Kugelhopf, which is, you know, a yeasted cake.
Yes.
As well as, you know, different types of tarts like, you know, apple tarts and so on. And what I loved doing was starting out with a recipe and then making it mine. So I'd tweak it a little bit at a time. And then the end result would be something that I really enjoyed. And I realized baking for others that other people enjoy the cakes that I was making. And so when I wanted to relaunch my career, I decided that I'd always wanted to start a business. And so the idea of starting a food business, that came naturally. The other requirement I wanted was that I wanted whatever business I started to bring joy and fulfillment into my life. I wanted to derive meaning from it. And so that was a lens through which I started, you know, looking for ideas. And I was walking through a supermarket one afternoon and happened to walk down the baking aisle and saw cake mixes on one side of the aisle and that were, you know, traditional American cake mixes. And on the other side of the aisle were these international olive oils.
Oh,
and
really?
I thought, yeah, and I thought, you know, and I also noticed that there was, you know, there was pasta, there was balsamic vinegar, there were crackers, couscous, but there was no sweet complement for the olive oils. And I thought it was such a shame that there was nothing that really showcased the international diversity of the olive oils. And so the idea of bringing the, you know, the cake mixes with and pairing them with the olive oil, just, you know, that was a eureka moment for that. But I, at that point in time, I had never baked a cake with olive oil. I'd only baked
buttercream. It's a very Italian thing, you know. I mean,
yeah. Exactly. And so that for me was, you know, I was not sure that the idea would work because I was not sure that olive oil would be a good ingredient in the kind of international cakes that I wanted to make. And so the first iterations of this cake mix actually had a butter method. And so I had these little pamphlets and there were, you know, a few cake recipes in there. And there's one method for using butter and another method for using olive oil. And, you know, I tried to mix the cakes out on my family. I had, you know, at that point my kids were, I have twin daughters who were 8 years old and I have a son who was 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I tried the mixes on them. Friends and family tried them. I actually shipped samples to my mother-in-law in France and my mother in Ghana. And so I tried on three continents. Person after person after person would say, I love these olive oil cakes. And that was when I knew that I had a winner, and that's when I dropped the butter method.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
olive oil won me over.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised when I came across from my list of the Sophie winners because you don't really see olive oil cakes outside of Italy, where they're very common. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised. And meanwhile, I have a hairstylist who's Italian. Who's going to try one of these mixes, by the way.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that.
He's really excited about it. Yeah. So, but, I mean, you hit the market at the right time where because of the quality of what you've put into these mixes, because you hit at the time where people are really interested in food, but they really don't have much time. And so convenience interferes with a lot of what's going on in especially food market. But you have the convenience, the quality ingredients, and the end product, which is delicious. So you hit the market at the right time. But as I said,
Thank
it's a
you.
Really difficult niche because it's so crowded.
Yeah, that is absolutely true.
I mean, you're competing with people who companies that have been around for quite a long time and also they're also convenient. The quality is the difference, though, isn't it?
I think so. And for me, these cake mixes are really more than a product. And I'm grateful it hits all the marks, but they really are a celebration of our cultural diversity and our shared humanity. And that is really woven into all aspects of the cake mix. You know, starting from our logo, which was inspired by a Ghanaian Adinkras symbol, which means welcome. And so it's made up of two connected olives that signify connection and cooperation, with a seat in the center made up of two olive flower blossoms that symbolize acceptance and friendliness. And the and so the Adinkras symbol is obviously, you know, symbolic of my Ghanaian heritage, but by infusing it with these olive oil elements, it really also is a global symbol that connects the two together. And that really is, it's what it's about. And so I hope that, you know, anyone who tries these mixes really feels like, you know, they're a citizen of wherever they are, they're local to wherever they are, but it's also a reminder that we are global citizens.
Right. I mean, I'm glad that you waited to get your business started, because in the process, from your life, you've learned some really deep principles of, in terms of what food can be, not just food. And you seem to understand that on a different level than a lot of people that we interview, actually.
Well, you know, I was thinking about what led to all this. You know, obviously it sparked those thoughts myself. And my entire life has been a multicultural experience. I've never experienced life from the perspective of only having one single culture. And so I started, you know, chatting about this with you before the interview started, but my mother is a quarter Togolese, a quarter Ghanaian, a quarter Dutch, and a quarter German. My father is a quarter German, three quarters Ghanaian. And I grew up in Ghana, which in Accra, which a lot of people don't realize is quite multicultural. And I went to international schools. And so one of my earliest memories growing up is, you know, seeing a friend of mine in preschool who was Lebanese holding, you know, what I knew then as Lebanese bread, but which was a pita bread with za'atar seasoning on it. And I remember really wanting to say, you know, can I try that? And, you know, because my mother spent some time in France in the 60s, and my father was educated in Germany. He went to university in Germany. And they, at our family table, we would have, you know, Ghanaian food, we would have German food, we would have French food, we would have, you know, and then at my international school, I had so many friends who were, you know, mixed race, half this, half that, whose parents had been, you know, in other parts of the world. And our school anthem was understanding of each other. And essentially it said, you know, from all the countries of the earth, we come and turn to you, from different nations, different creeds, and different aspects too. And it ended with, and the greatest lesson of all, the greatest lesson we were learning at school was all about understanding of each other. And so, you know, from there, with, you know, combined that with being married to a man who is French, his father's actually Portuguese, wow. And he comes from the northeastern part of France, you know, that borders with Germany. So he's from the Alsace region of France. So there's just so much, you know, so much cultural influence going on.
But we need that now more than ever.
That is true. That is true. And I find, you know, I find that it's a question of your state of mind, because everywhere you go, there are people who will welcome you. And I think especially now, you know, in the United States, we have so many different cultures, people of different cultures. I regularly meet people who will say, oh, you're from Ghana. Well, did you know my brother's married to somebody who's from Congo, right? And you would never tell that a person on, you know, just looking at them has these connections to places, you know, that are close to you or that you love. And so this is really just, you know, we are all formed. We have many connections that are deep and meaningful to many places. And these cake mixes just really, they celebrate that.
Well, no. How did you decide on this being your first adventure, I guess we'd call it? How did you decide on, start with, who you think your customer is?
So from the get-go, because I decided that these would be international olive oil cake mixes, it was the customer was essentially baked into the idea. I wanted the company to be collaborative. I wanted to make space. I wanted an open-ended product that made space for others. And so that's why I did not pair the cake mixes with my own choice of olive oil. And so in terms of who I think my customer base is, it's olive oil companies, olive oil producers, olive oil importers that are looking for a sweet complement to not just their olive oils, but other specialty food products that they sell, whether it's, you know, jam or tea or honey. These cake mixes, because of the breadth of recipes, really incorporate specialty food ingredients. The other retailers, so for example, a retailer like Whole Foods would be another great customer. And, you know, anybody who likes international cakes would be a good customer base.
And so to do this, you developed a marketing strategy, because have you had a lot of experience in marketing?
No, I'm learning. Everything is, you know, at first impression. So in terms of my marketing strategy, I'm really reaching out to olive oil companies. And I do have, I only launched a few months ago, so I'm not in very many stores. I'm available online through my website, flourandolive.com. I'm also available online at Full Olive. It's an online South American specialty food company, and we're in a few physical stores. So Affamata, which is a food store in Newburyport, Massachusetts, McEvoy Ranch in Petaluma, California,
wow.
Oil and Vinegar in the Seattle area in Bellevue Square, and Helper General in Utah. So that's the current retail footprints that I have. And, you know, like I mentioned, I'm approaching retailers and olive oil stores to see whether they would like to carry these mixes.
Well, I mean, that seems like a good possibility, actually. On your website, can you just order? Do you have e-commerce on your website?
Yes, you can absolutely order the cake mixes on my website, or if you go to my Instagram page, it's also possible to shop the cake mixes there.
Great. What do you find makes cakes with olive oil special? What sets them apart and above?
Well,
about to.
So olive oil being, you know, it's just, it makes the cakes taste lighter. They're not as heavy and dense as butter cakes. They also have, they keep their moisture for longer. And the olive oil lends a beautiful flavor profile to these cakes. And what makes having these international olive oils really exceptional is that, you know, like wine, olive oil has terroir.
Yes.
And so there is just an incredible spectrum of flavor profiles that you can pair the cake mixes with. And actually, initially, what I thought would be really great would be to, if, you know, a customer walked into an olive oil store and picked a cake mix and asked, you know, a sommelier or an assistant at the store to help them pair the cake mix with an olive oil in order to bring out a certain, you know, flavor profile. And so I think the options with olive oil and these cake mixes really are they're almost, I wouldn't, not quite endless, but certainly quite the possibilities are quite amazing.
Well, you've just in the last few minutes you've explained a very direct route to a special market niche for you, and a way to actually compete in that very crowded market. So, I mean, it seems to me like a win-win.
Thank you. I really did want it to be. So I did not want this business to be just about me. I really do want, you know, the collaboration. It would be my dream if, you know, these olive oils were to open the door to more international specialty products on grocery shelves, you know, including these olive oils, because I just think that there is, you know, the blossoming geographic diversity of olive oils is just a beautiful thing. And, you know, we normally have a lot of olive oils from, you know, Europe and California here, but it would be nice to see a wider spectrum, you know, South African, South American olive oils, Japanese olive oils. But I think the possibilities are really great.
And Greek, so Greek, don't forget Greek.
That would be great. Yeah, I have a Greek recipe as well. So the olive oil recipes also come with these recipe labels that are pre-formatted, and they're at the bottom of every recipe page. They're editable. And so, you know, if somebody wants to, for example, write a little note on the cake mix and attach it to the back of our product packaging, that's what it's made for. And so, and it's really easy to build gift baskets around those recipe labels.
Wow. Well, you really, raising all those kids, I guess you had a lot of time to think about how you wanted this product and company to run, huh?
I love ideas. And, you know, this was something that really spoke to me personally. And so there were all these thoughts that came out of creating these cake mixes that felt really natural. And as someone who had been a baker going into this, I created something that I would have liked to see on the marketplace. So in many ways, I was my own customer when I was developing the recipes.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you going to these trade shows as well?
Yes, I'm going to the Summer Fancy Food Show.
Oh, why are you going to be there? Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, you won the gold trophy. So would that be your first venture into the fancy food shows?
It's my first venture into any food show. I've never even been in a farmer's market.
Well, I mean, be prepared, because opportunities every place you look. This is such a huge show, and people really they feel a part of a community, and it's less competitive, that more communal than you imagine, because everybody comes, socializes, and it's great. And I think you'll make really wonderful connections there.
I'm looking forward to it.
Be prepared. It's huge. I mean, you're not going to get around to everybody.
Well, my sister will be there with me, so I'm really looking forward to sharing this first experience with her, and you know, just to take it as it comes, right? And enjoy the process.
Well, it is a process, as I said. I mean, to 3 days is not enough to actually touch on everything that's shown there. And of course, you know, they have all these activities that run after hours mm-hmm. too now. But you want to make connections. We regularly interview somebody with a different specialty food company, and he set off with a plan to do a particular product. But what he's found in the whole process of this is that he had the means to set up a community, and that's what's happened with his business. And it sounds like you'd be on the same trajectory.
I hope so. Yeah, I'm definitely looking for that.
Well, I don't think it would be that difficult for you to get onto that train of activity at all. Yeah, and I can tell you're a people person as well. So, I really love hearing your reactions to this first show. Maybe we could set up. Yeah, I really would like to hear what you think about it all. It's an extraordinary experience. You have my email, and my signature is my phone number, and so do let me hear what your takeaways from the show.
Well, it sounds like an incredible show. I was reading that there are about 180,000 products that will be on display, and 34,000 attendees and about 2,800 booths. So the numbers are just mind-boggling. My plan is to go, and I didn't even expect to be exhibiting at the show. This decision came after I won the Sophie, and so I'm really just planning on taking it, one bite at a time.
Yeah, well, it's a lot to take in. It really is, yeah. But I think you'll do just fine. Well, I'm really excited for you. I mean, I know you're excited too. And do get back to us after your experience with the show and talk to us about it.
I would love to. I really
appreciate
being on your show. I would love that. That sounds like a plan.
Let's set up your impressions from the first show and do a discussion on that. That would be fun.
That sounds really great. Yeah, I think so. And I love chatting with you, so I'll look forward to that.
I've never asked anybody to do this before, but I would like to know your experience and your thoughts.
Oh, yeah. I guess you don't get that many people who are going to go to the fancy food show for the first time.
Oh no! I mean, a lot of people. I mean, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and they've managed to set aside a section with softer fees so that more people and startups can go, and that's another thing that they're doing right, I think, too. So, well. Good luck to you. Enjoy the show. And don't forget to get back to us and keep us in mind for a rehash of your experiences.
Well, thank you so much. And, I look forward to getting back in touch with you.
Great. And listeners, don't forget Flour and Olive. Check out that website. And you'll be making olive oil cakes forever. Thank you so much, Estelle.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.